on both sides. Where's okay, there we go. All right, here we go. Do a little intro and off we go. Begins in 3, 2, 1.
I have
current geek.
Hello and welcome back to Current Geek, everybody. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you to talk about the things that matter most. My name is Scott. That's Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Scott.
You know what threw me off is we usually have that under open and it's not there now. I don't know why. I haven't memorized, but it just threw me off.
Oh, we don't have it in the doc.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I didn't even notice it, though. Now it's impressive. Yeah. It went from like, oh, Scott had a little verbal typo to like, wow, you did all that from memory?
I had a literal typo is what happened.
Yeah.
Tom, welcome. It's good to be back with you, as always, on a Friday.
I'm sorry we missed last week, everyone, but I successfully, personally saw to the graduation of the entire class of 2015 at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
Did you stand up and speak or anything? Any of that fun stuff? No?
I did. They told me to please be quiet and sit back down, sir. You're not part of the ceremony.
Sir, we don't care about the state of podcasting. Please sit down. It's fine. Hey, we're glad to be here and it's good to have you home. And, one of these days you got to tell us about all the like old haunts you visited. Cause I'm sure you get a chance to do some of that when you go home.
A little bit. Yeah.
We'll talk Mario's about that sometime. Pizza. Oh geez. Still there. All this stuff still there.
Saw Mario. Mario's, but was behind the counter. He's not always behind the counter anymore. He's kind of handed it off to his son, Leo.
Mm.
But Mario was there making the pizzas.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That just has a better ring to it than Leo's pizza, honestly. Also with us today, we have a couple of guests. Couple of pals of ours, gaming buddies, let's call them. First, we have John Jagger of the Azeroth Roundtable, other shows, and he hangs out with me on the NVIDIA stream every weekend. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott. How are you?
I'm fantastic. When are we playing Heroes again? Right now? Great. Good night, everybody.
Yes, let's do it.
All right. We'll see you guys later. We are joyfully hooked on that game. Also with us, Ben Bumhofer, also of Azeroth Roundtable and multiple other projects, and one of the leaders, I would say, of our raid team. You're at least a... how do I put this? You may not be the guy with the label, right? But you're helping people do stuff.
Well, technically, I'm the guy with the label. I mean, that's if you ask Tet and Alakaz, but I don't think so.
I think you're the guy with the label, whether they say you are or not. Everybody else can be blah, 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 but Ben steps in with a smart idea occasionally, and that's when I get loot. So good job on that. It's good to have you both here. Thank you for being here. Let's jump right into the news.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what's going on in the world?
Well, for anyone hoping that the upcoming release of Windows 10 would help them increase productivity in the workplace, Dee Bissinge has some news that might make you just give that hope up. Microsoft announced this week that Candy Crush Saga will come pre-installed on all copies of Windows 10. Ugh. Except maybe the enterprise copies. No word on whether you will be able to opt out of that automatic install.
Are they is this the solitaire? Although I heard solitaire is coming back, but is this like the solitaire of Windows 10? It's like the one built-in game everyone can expect to play.
You know, I'm an older Windows user, yeah, Scott, so yeah. I think of it as the reversey of Windows 10. But yeah, essentially the same concept.
That weird chess game that comes with OS 10.
Reversey is the one that came with Windows 286.
Ah, there you go. When did we first get Minesweeper? That was 95, was it? Windows 95?
I think so. I don't think it was in Windows 3. So yeah, I think it was Windows 95.
All right. What do you say there, Ben, about the idea of being forced to play? Not forced, but you're gonna be presented with an opportunity to play the free to play mega hit Candy Crush Saga right there on your Windows machine.
Well, gosh, 2 years ago when I first had it on my phone and played like 3 rounds and then completely quit, I am so looking forward to having it back on my PC. I mean, just gunning for it.
Yeah,
it's
can't
gonna
wait.
Be fantastic.
Can't wait. It's going to be great. John, how about you? Are you chomping at the bit, the candy bit?
I've never played Candy Crush Saga. I have no intention of ever playing Candy Crush Saga.
Well, one would assume, and it doesn't say here, but I would assume that all the same free-to-play nuisances and or hooks, however you want to look at them, are part of this build.
One would expect.
Yeah. And that's fine. I know we're in a new era now where this stuff is, you know, this is kind of what people are doing. But listen, when I was playing Bejeweled 1 on my Palm Pilot 5, I think it was the Palm 5 that I played it on, in black and white, mind you, I was happy to do it. That was true match 3. Screw this stuff now. There weren't no candy. These were gems, damn it.
Weren't no crushing.
No. can crush no gems, but whatever.
Yeah, they're too hard.
let them come. There's nothing we can do about it.
I had an awkward Candy Crush Saga moment, though. All I right. never played it,
all right.
but I went to see that new Godzilla movie yeah. when it was out in theaters. I got invited by a couple that I work with, and we got to the theater. Everything was fine. Nice little social gathering. I didn't feel like a third wheel or anything. We sat down to wait for the movie to begin. They both pulled out their phones and were just 100% into Candy Crush Saga. Yeah. Wouldn't react to a word I said to them. Wouldn't engage with me in any way, just in the Candy Crush zone.
Mm. I feel like we're past that now in terms of its whatever its big peak was. I don't think we're there anymore. It's like Angry Birds kind of came, peaked, and then, you know, now people still think of it fondly, but nobody's
talking
about it.
Well, that's why King's willing to do this, right?
Sure.
They're like, we need to pull more people into Candy Crush. And in a way, this shows that Candy Crush has now moved into the realm of a classic.
Right. right. And their stock is down a little. King, that is. This is the parent company, King Digital mm-hmm. PLC. What does PLC stand for? Is that a plucky liability company?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's a plucky liability company. You have to prove your pluckiness in a filing.
Yeah. Well, wow. They did. They had a real bad dip earlier in the day, and everybody thought, oh no, what's happening? And then maybe this news put them back up on top. They are officially
a public limited company.
Oh, there you go. All right.
It's a UK thing.
They are 0.04% up on the end of the day, but they had a rocky day on the stock market. So good for them, I suppose, and good luck to everyone who likes to match their candy.
That's it for your current Geek Financial Report. Average Random Joe submitted the news that Reddit CEO Ellen Pao, interim CEO Ellen Pao, went on NPR's All Things Considered to talk about Reddit's new anti-harassment rules, which have, shocker, been somewhat controversial because something on the internet changed. Some users call it censorship. Others say doesn't go far enough. Pao was asked whether Reddit would ever delete offensive subreddits because they offended someone. And she said the question is whether it would make them fear for their safety or the safety of those around them. And then she also added, it's not our site's goal to be a completely free speech platform.
It is easy for people on the web to expect everything to adhere to the same rules as pro or anti-censorship that we hold to governments. And it's interesting always for me to see the outcry when something like this happens, where people expect there to be an absolute no holds barred, everyone can say anything they want kind of environment around a website or company or whatever. And my position on this has always been this. For example, if you want to hang out in our forums and whatever in our community, be a part of our guild, which these two fine gentlemen today, our guests, are part of as well. If you want to do that, you can't come in and, you know, you can come in and kind of be a nice guest, but you can't come in and poop on my couch and expect me to ignore it. You know, you can't just come in there and go, and me go, oh, well, that's fine, because this is a big free environment.
I wish I'd done that years ago.
I know, that was an embarrassing moment with Tom. But yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's to me that none of this should be surprising, and they should probably want some of this, because Reddit's being accused constantly of, you know, some rough stuff over there. And I know that your average Reddit user is just trying to use a great service, and it is one. It's an incredible thing, that whole thing. The way that site has grown and become the internet's front page, they like to call themselves, or they have in the past, is nothing short of great. But, you know, the idea of inserting a few things to protect people, I don't know why.
Well, let me set a couple of ground rules before we get Ben and John to weigh in on this. First of all, every time somebody says free speech, I get an email.
Yeah.
It's like an angel getting its wings when a bell rings.
All right.
And it's somebody saying, you know, freedom of speech is only a government thing. And that's not true.
Mm.
First Amendment protections are a government thing. And sometimes that people are very clear on that when they email me too. So I want to give folks credit for using it correctly. And sometimes there is confusion over the legality of freedom of speech. Let's agree that we're not talking about a First Amendment right when we're talking about the Reddit. We're talking about the generalized concept of freedom of speech, how much freedom of speech Reddit is going to allow. And when Ellen Pao says it's not a completely free speech platform, that's what she means. We are going to have some restrictions on things you can say. And the second ground rule is, and I ran into this when I was running a forum in the late 90s, where somebody's like, oh, but you're saying this is a free speech platform, so I can talk about NAMBLA, right? And I'm like, well, no, I own the platform. Yeah. I get to decide what things I'm comfortable having here or not. And Reddit's the same way. Reddit owns the platform. So I think the question should be, what is in Reddit's best interests and what is in our best interest as wanting a free exchange of ideas for Reddit to clamp down on, and what is not? Yeah. What is the pooping on the couch analogy, and what is just like, no, wait a minute, people should be able to say controversial things because that leads to a better discussion.
Well, so I'm glad that she clarified a bit of it, because this whole thing about fear for safety or the safety of those around you is an important distinction, because what she's not saying is, yes, we will eliminate all of the Brazilian ass porn subreddits that we have or whatever.
Dang it.
I know.
She's not saying that.
She's saying those are not hurting my, you know, there are plenty of arguments that may be on either side of this, but she is saying, in effect, those subreddits, unless they are threatening somebody or those around them, they're fine. That's how I take what she said. That's how I take that quote. Could be wrong, but here's how Tom, ultimately the whole thing works itself out, because users will decide, kind of like they did in the Dig days, that Dig, you know, Dig was no longer representing what they thought was the fair and open exchange of ideas. So they left and they went to Reddit. And, you know, that's kind of the storied history of these two sites. Well, here's a case where that could happen again if they got real weird. As long as Reddit does something that, you know, is in their bet, like you said, in their interest, and we make a decision that that's okay, then the site continues on. Otherwise, they're off to a third thing, and then we have that for 5 years, and then we do a fourth thing, and it's just the recycling of the internet. It's the way it goes. All right, John, Ben, thoughts, anything?
It always bugs me when people, you know, kind of get up in arms about the whole, it's free speech, it's censorship, and all of that, because I do agree that people should be allowed to express themselves and give their, you know, opinions, whether they're in the majority, the minority, whether those opinions are controversial, what have you. I think it's very important to allow that and have a forum for that. But I also think people have a right to feel safe to do that. And that's the point where it falls apart for me, is when you think that you can go in and consider it, well, I'm free to tell someone I'm going to kill them for their opinion. That's where it breaks down for me. If you want to have a good in-depth conversation about something that's maybe an uncomfortable or controversial issue, let's have it. Let's do it. But don't turn it into threats against, you know, the person involved, the families that have nothing to do with it. That's where it falls apart. And that's why I think, you know, the quote saying that, you know, if it's affecting safety and for the people and those around them, that's when they're going to be looking at it. I think that's where the important distinction is made.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. What do you say, Ben?
I mean, it's kind of funny in the article how, you know, they're pointing out that, oh, it's, you know, this confusing language and everything. It's like, well, it's not exactly a black and white situation. Sometimes you have to kind of lean one way or the other based on what is actually said. It's like John was saying, though. I could say, John, I do not like your hat because I think it makes your head look small or something. That's not true. I don't believe that.
That's the plan. This head is gigantic. So mission accomplished.
Yeah. So, you know, I could say that and, you know, list 20 reasons why or why I think this hat might work. You know, I think a 10-gallon hat would be better for your head. However, I'm not going to say, hey, I'm going to fracking kill you in your sleep because, you know, that's something slightly different.
Yeah, that's pooping on the couch. So
yeah, exactly.
Get out of the house, clean your mess and don't come back is how I would treat it. So we'll see what they do. I don't know. I mean, like I keep coming down. I'm a little nihilistic about it because websites come and websites go. And it's often this really weird balance of what is the current culture? Are we the it thing for very long? You know, when was Facebook cool with kids and now not so much? And now the old ladies like it. And what does that mean? Well, so far nothing, but could it mean something? Could the MySpace curse come again? Could Friendster come from the grave? And, you know, do people remember this cycle? And so whenever Reddit's freaking out about something, I just go, it's just part of this freaking cycle. It's the cycle again, you know, fresh new recruits, out go the old guard. It's just the way it is.
Yep. They're just going to move to a third platform that combines Dig and Reddit to Digit.
Digit. There you go.
Yeah.
Done. Problem solved.
But we have a new problem. JMZ668 flagged us the story that Simon Pegg, yes, that Simon Pegg, said in a Radio Times interview, and the reason I reassured you that it's the Simon Pegg you're thinking of is because listen to what he said. Obviously, I'm very much a self-confessed fan of science fiction and genre cinema. So far, so good. But part of me looks at society as it is now and thinks we've been infantilized by our own taste. We're essentially all consuming very childish things. Comic books, superheroes, adults are watching this stuff and taking it seriously. And of course, the internet exploded at Simon Pegg. So he wrote a thoughtful commentary in which he explains that he's always been fascinated with the idea of his generation's prolonged youth and how this phenomenon has been, as he says, cannily co-opted by market forces. And he ends by saying, "I love science fiction and fantasy and do not think it's at all childish. I am still a nerd and proud." It's worth reading the whole post, though. It's very thoughtful. SimonPegg.net, if you want to check that out. But can he... Is this just somebody saying something and then changing his mind? He does admit in the post that sometimes he'll say opinions that aren't his when he's in an interview because mm-hmm. he's tired of interviews mm-hmm. and he gets bored with hearing his own opinions. But he also is pointing out something, which is we have great things like Ex Machina mm-hmm. or Mad Max Fury Road, but we also have a lot of very shallow movies out there, and he worries that maybe that's having a bad effect.
I don't know that it's having a bad effect, or if it's good or it's bad, or and I'm not even sure he's making a judgment call. Even in the more out of context comments he made in that interview, didn't seem all that inflammatory to me. All they did was they kind of mimic my own occasional question, which is, you know, what matters most as we age? Like, what do you care about the most? And if you care about deep, thoughtful, important commentary and storytelling or whatever, are we getting that, or are we getting, you know, sugar cereal versions of that sort of thing? I think they're valid questions, and I kind of agree with him, you know, in a way. What I agree with is this fascination with how we are the generation that stayed with our cool stuff the longest. You know, we're as obsessed today with something like Mad Max as we were in 1981 when I saw it, you know, on somebody's TV screen or whatever. Like, we're still into it. Those comic books we read as kids, now we just gleefully love the fact that they're these huge, expensive, in-your-face things, and we love that. So I don't know that any generation before that or after that has even had this opportunity to live with their toys longer, but we kind of have. And what does it mean? I don't know. Maybe it means nothing, but I think him having the conversation and talking about it is just fine, and everybody having knee-jerk reactions to it is a little strange to me. I don't know why they're so insecure in their decision to stick with the stuff they like, but I don't know that none of this just jumped out and offended me. What do you guys think? Ben, what do you think of this whole thing?
It's definitely not offensive at all. And I mean, just looking at, you know, a lot of the roles that he's done, you know, In Space, Shaun of the Dead, you know, Paul, everything like that, I can kind of see where he's coming from with that viewpoint. But one of the things that's, you know, really, you know, captured my imagination is take a look at, you know, the original Star Trek series. You know, we're going to, you know, talk about social issues and everything and put it in a sci-fi setting because to some people it's more relatable that way because it's like, oh, it's fantasy. I don't have to exactly look at, you know, what's going on right now. Go towards the reboot and, you know, it's a lot more, you know, action-packed adventure and everything like that. You know, they've Star Wars-ified Star Trek in that sense. Well, now that Simon Pegg is actually working on the script for the next Star Trek movie, and because it's going more towards the exploration as opposed to, you know, defend Earth and everything like that, is he going to try and bring some of those ideas and more mature, you know, social concepts into the script that way?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there was a recent article about how the first run of the script got rejected outright because the executives felt like it was too Star Trek-y, which made everybody a little nervous. Like, well, wait, what does that mean? Too thoughtful, too whatever.
Who are all these people in different colored shirts? I don't get it.
Yeah, we can't expect
just get,
our
just
audience.
Get rid of the red ones.
Yeah, yeah,
what's
exactly.
This big saucer thing? Just make the ship a rocket.
John, are you impressed with anything he said or are displeased on the other side of it?
No, I actually agree with a lot of what he said. And I think a lot of people who are getting kind of up in arms about it maybe only made it as far as the headline of the article and said, well, look at this guy. He's writing Star Trek 3. And he has no right to say that because he's got a really good point. And especially if you know that history with him writing it, you get the impression that maybe he's starting to see it from his own standpoint of, you know, maybe he's trying to write something that's a little, you know, headier for a typical action blockbuster and being told, no, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's a lot of room to grow. You know, I look at the Marvel movies and they're doing a great job of building their own internal universe, but what's the overall greater meaning to that? You know, it kind of just is this self-contained, it means something in the context of this fictional setting. And I, you know, nobody's going to go see Ant-Man for its brilliant commentary on science and things like that. So I think there's room for them to grow. I think there's room for them to tell you know, a little harder hitting stories with these movies and things like that. I think that's why Winter Soldier is by, you know, most considered the best Marvel movie. It had a message in there.
Mm-hmm.
It had a relevant message in there. It wasn't just, hey, come see our action blockbuster and then go home.
Yeah. I'm convinced that it goes back and forth. Tom's always talking about the pendulum swinging, and it's always something always swings back when it gets too far. I know I won't shut up. You won't shut up about it. I love the analogy though, because it's always true. Like, we are all into fantasy very hardcore for a while there. We've all very much, and I say this is the collective sort of viewing public or those interested in that kind of fiction, have kind of swung sci-fi at the moment. And we'll probably get overwhelmed by it. It'll be too much Marvel, too much Star Wars, too much Star Trek. And at some point we'll be like, you know what, I could really go for some sweet ass freaking fantasy movies.
Brazilian, wait.
I know, yes. Where you can get some of that, Tom. I know where you can go. But yeah, I just think it'll swing back and people will expect more. They'll start to go a little bit like, well, that was a shallow Marvel movie. How about we not do that anymore? And the market tends to correct it. So it'll be fun.
Well, and I have to applaud all you guys because I really think you expressed well what Simon Pegg was trying to express in his post on his site, which is, hey, when I wrote Spaced, I didn't write it as a guide to here's how you should live. I wrote it as, you know, this is kind of my observations of something. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean he doesn't like sci-fi and fantasy either. It just means that you know, the issue can be more complex than just sci-fi good, sci-fi bad. Those are your only choices.
Yeah, there's a nuance here, and there's definitely a place for throwaway crappy cinema, and there's a place for thoughtful, interesting, you know, cinema, and we've certainly seen some of that, more of that lately. But I kind of feel like myself siding with him, and I'm a little surprised about the outrage, but whatever. When people have an opinion or a position that they feel is threatened, the internet's the perfect place to go yell about it. So I don't know why we expect anything else.
It's just like Reddit. Yeah. You know, there are places where Reddit can be kind of nasty. There are places where Reddit can be hilarious. There are places where you can submit stories for Current Geek.
Yeah.
At currentgeek.reddit.com, for instance. Like Jeff_Rose did. Over at Jalopnik, some genius in the comments section decided to go all math on Back to the Future. His conclusion? Marty McFly could never have reached 88 miles per hour in the Twin Peaks Pines Mall parking lot. The commenter pulled up a map of the actual location. It's a mall in the city of Industry, California. Then he used a map of the DeLorean's two time travel routes, the one with the dog and the one with Marty, did some Google Maps measurement using the Google Maps measurement tool and math, and concluded that Marty didn't have enough room to reach 88 miles per hour before crashing into the photo mat, because that is the part of the movie that's hard to believe.
Sure. We all got hung up on that part. Not the time travel, not a fading photograph that somehow inexplicably someone took a photograph of nobody because they all faded out. There's a lot of issues with that movie, obviously, but I love stuff like this. I love putting, Mythbusters does this all the time. They'll take a series like James Bond movies and they'll try to figure out if things that were done could be done, or they'll say, here's the MacGyver series. Could MacGyver really use gum and grass and blow up a safe? And, yes. You know, you never know. So I love this sort of thing. I was under the impression, though, that mall was torn down. So I guess they're looking at records of this, or maybe it isn't actually torn down and I misheard that. But I thought that was long gone.
Good question. Maybe, you know, he found an older map?
Could have been, because I know people used to go there to kind of pilgrimage to it after the movies were
a big hit. I thought you were going
to say pillage.
Yeah, pillage. Why it's not there anymore.
Pillage the mall. And then they tore it down and now there's nothing there. So, or there's other things there like homes or, you know, other buildings or something. I could be wrong about this. This is just my memory, but I don't know. What do you guys think of the, doing math on our movies to disprove their fiction?
Sure. Everything's bad when you put math up against it.
I don't know. I'm just worried that, you know, people are going to look too hard at Star Wars and tell me that it's actually not a documentary of something that happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Well, it's funny because I feel like we have to do this, though. Like, there's something in the fiction itself that invites it, because you've already enjoyed it the first time. Then you've seen it a bunch of other times. Now all the popular culture references are there and you're seeing it pop up in other movies and commercials and products. So we're just like feeding off the carcass of the film forever. I feel like these things just ask us to say, all right, well, now that we have drone technology, we can use that to mark the distance between this and this and the third of the movie. Like, we can start digging in and getting all meta with it. And I just think we live in a time where that's easy and fun. Like, you can put up a YouTube video about this in 5 minutes. Whereas it used to be, it was just you and, you know, you could scrawl that on your paper in school or something, but nobody cared. Now you can find people who care. So I think that's all this is. It's fun, though.
Yeah, this kind of stuff is cool. And, you know, it's fun having things like that, and then you get where it turns around, and then they acknowledge it later. Like, actually, I think it's weird. I think it was the last time I was on this show. We talked about Thor's hammer actually being based on fingerprints. And then in the new Avengers movie, they make a comment about Thor's hammer being usable because of fingerprints. Mm. So I think it's cool. I think it's funny when they do things like that. And then when the content is reactionary to that, who knows, maybe if we get a new Back to the Future, they'll make some comment about how this DeLorean is way faster than your typical DeLorean.
Actually, real quick, does everyone think we'll eventually get remakes or reboots or something to the Back to the Future series?
I hope not, but yeah, we will.
Yeah, I think
I'm sure
will.
There will be a day where they do it. I hope not. I would love to see some sort of actual sequel, because I won't lie, I got excited when I think it was IGN did that fake like Back to the Future sequel where it was mixed with Back to the Future and Fast and Furious. But I actually got excited about that. I was like, yeah, I'm in. I'm going to do this. This seems great.
What if it was, what if the director said, because he's still with us, what if he looks at George Miller's work with Fury Road and says, you know, I want to come back to the thing that made, that put me on the map the most. Why don't I make a new one of these? And maybe he could even reboot it the way George Miller did. Because,
as long as it's still a DeLorean.
Well, that's the trick, right? Are there any of those left? There's a couple of replicas and... I think it's
Sorry, I got lost looking at the Puente Hills Mall map.
Oh yeah, is it still there?
It's still there.
Oh my gosh.
The photo mat is not.
Okay.
The photo mat is just now more parking spaces.
Well, maybe it's because the Libyans ran into it.
Yeah, the Libyans ran into it.
Well, yeah, it makes sense, right?
And and nobody uses photo mats anymore at all. Well,
they do have a Buffalo Wild Wings though.
That's great. There
and
is everywhere.
Sears.
Yeah. I don't know how they found me, Marty, but they found me.
Plantation.
They've got sauce all over their face, but they found me. Anyway. moving on. Oh, by the way, I love the name Jalopnik. Just wanted to throw that out there. That guy's name is great.
That's good stuff. Yeah. All right. For the past 2 years, Breaking Bad fans have wondered, where's Huel? And if you're not one of them, let me explain. Saul Goodman's bodyguard. Now you remember. You're like, oh, that guy. Huel Babineau. He was last seen sitting in a safe house waiting for two characters to return who never would. Well, wonder no more. Breaking Bad creator Vince Gilligan has a new book out in which he reveals, spoiler alert, that Huel was probably taken back to DEA headquarters, questioned and released. Kind of denouement there. Said Gilligan, right now he's doing what Huel does best, whatever that is. He's out and about as a free man.
It's a pretty good impression. I'm not not going to lie.
Thank you.
So just standard procedure then. That's the answer. There was nothing special here. Just
it's funny that everyone's like, what about Huel? And Vince is like, well, they just released him. I mean,
what else would they do?
Well, he's really good at following directions. I mean, I could just see him just sitting there watching TV.
Well, in the show, they left it. I mean, they left it in a way that only TV can, which is unresolved, right? He sat in a room. He was told to stay there. And then we all have this cartoon vision that they just left him there and he never moved again. Like, it's really weird that we had that in our heads. Like,
guys.
Just the skeleton in the room when they eventually open the door.
Right. You expect like a Ferris Bueller ending where the credits are over. I actually kind of expected this. The very last episode, credits would end and then the camera would come, the lights would come up and Huel would still be in there like eating
a Pop-Tart
pizza or something. Yeah, I'm watching TV. So I don't know why we had that in our heads that would be a good idea, but I think I'm fine with it now. I've come to grips with it and it's fine.
Huel, now you know.
Yeah.
I just don't know what people expected.
Yeah.
Like, what was going to be the bigger? And then he became president of the United States.
In Independence Day 2.
Yeah. But I would like.
I'd watch that.
Here's what I would like. Huel played by that one. I forgot his name. And Bill Burr played the other guy. The two of Saul's helpers, right? Get those guys back for season two of Saul. And I.
Oh, yeah. We got to see their origin stories now.
Yeah. And that's exciting. Having seen how they did Mike's origin story, and this doesn't spoil anything if you haven't seen the series, that really makes me excited to see how he ends up with those two chuckleheads.
Whoa, Mike has an origin story? Thanks a lot, Scott.
I blew the whole thing.
It's been 2 weeks. We're good.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought maybe Mike never started, and it was like some kind of paradox.
I love that Gilligan's saying in public that 2 weeks is long enough before you can talk about spoilers openly. I love that it has taken on such hard, like, in bronze rule status for
Gilligan
people.
Gilligan rule.
Yeah, the Gilligan rule. You'll never get off the island, and there you go.
3-hour tour. Iceworm 1980. You know, Iceworm. Yeah. He writes the quizzes. Yeah. Let us know the International Space Station could get a laser. Actually, a telescope with a laser, and it's meant to be used to clean up space trash because there are 3,000 tons of debris in orbit, which is roughly 15 blue whales.
Oh my gosh. Or
1,500 cars, but laser. So please support the plan from Japan's RIKEN to combine a laser with its Extreme Universe Space Observatory, which is already called the Extreme Universe Space Observatory. You got to add a laser to it, put it on the ISS under human control. Because the other plans are NASA's ground-based lasers, which is kind of cool but boring in comparison. And then there's the European Union's Stardust project, once proposed a swarm of navigable laser-equipped satellites. And we all know how that would end.
Zap, zap is how it would end. I guess that's the idea here, though, right? Literally zapping trash out of the sky.
Yeah, it's kind of more nudging it and getting it to burn up on reentry.
Oh, I get you. Okay.
Yeah. It's not even as awesome as it should be.
It would be much awesomer if it was actually 600 elephants or 15 blue whales floating in space and those had to burn up on reentry.
And a pot of flowers.
Yeah, see? We know that reference. What do you guys think of space lasers there? John, you want to get up there?
I support lasers as a solution to pretty much any problem that we might have. Sure, the Galactic Empire perhaps took this policy a little too far, but I assure you nobody on Alderaan has any problems anymore.
Yeah, they're not worried about anything, are they?
In a better place.
Think of those they left behind, but other than that, it's fine. This is cool. Ben, if someone said to you, we have a lot of space debris. I mean, this is a very real problem, though, for when we want to do low orbit things. We want to get up there and hang around, and there's all this crap flying around. Some of it is stuff we put up there, of it. It'd be nice to not have a 60,000-mile-per-hour little speck of whatever that's going to tear George Clooney's suit open, you know?
Right? I was going to say, I've seen Gravity. I mean, if George Clooney could just pull out a laser and shoot all the debris coming towards him, how great would that be?
Yeah, right?
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think the only solution better than a laser is if there was some sort of Superman that could just gather it all up and throw it into the sun.
Some kind of Superman, you say?
Yes.
Huh. I like where you're going with this. I
think powered you might by the sun, I would imagine.
Yeah.
SwiftPaws noted that Wired has the first official public pictures of Orgrim Doomhammer, as played by Robert Kaczynski in the upcoming Warcraft movie. Wired says ILM has, quote, created the most lifelike CGI orc audiences have ever seen.
Versus all the other
ones. The only one? Yeah. I don't know. Warcraft comes to theaters June 10th, 2016, unless they move it again.
I thought it was March. Why was June 10th not on my radar? I don't know why.
I think they moved. I don't know if they moved it to March and then to June. I know they moved it once.
Well,
yeah, I think Duncan Jones just moved it or tweeted about a few days ago. Or something.
Oh, you know what? You're right. He did talk about a second delay. You're right.
Yeah.
And we talked about it on the show.
That's what it is.
Well, okay. So Orgrim is a cool character. Much lore about him. He's an important dude. They named a whole city after him in the future of Azeroth.
That would be City of Orgrim.
Yeah, the Orgrim City, you know.
Orgrimville.
Orgrim Town, they prefer. It's very Portlandia. It's kind of hipster and stuff. Donuts.
Orgrimlandia.
Anyway, Orgrimlandia is very good. He's an important character, and they are looking. I mean, if that is the detail we can expect, and matching that with what I saw at BlizzCon and what you saw, Tom, last year at BlizzCon with me, in fact, in the same theater at the same time, we watched it together. If they can get the fidelity that we saw moving in that final few minutes where they showed us that sneak peek and continue to match up with what we're seeing here visually, I really feel like this movie has a chance to not just blow our minds with the CGI. CGI is one thing, great, good technology is always good, you know, whatever. But what they've created here is an Orgrim that feels right at home in the Warcraft universe in ways I didn't quite expect. He's somehow stylized yet realistic at the same time. And when you see this guy, I think it was Dills who said it this morning, maybe Patrick, when you see this guy standing at 10 feet tall and who knows how wide next to some puny human in armor, we're going to just, you know, all of our nerd nerves are going to go off at the same time. I'm so excited. It's going to be great. What do you guys think?
Well, I was in that theater as well, not at the same time, but seeing the movement and the facial expression and everything worked really well. And I mean, it was incredibly believable. The only thing I don't like too much is that, I mean, I know that he's supposed to be this big hulking, you know, orc and everything, but his muscles look a little too big and he's got this itty bitty head. That's the only issue that I have with it.
Well, you have a head size thing, don't you?
Yeah, apparently. Really do. Jeez. Well, like, but hold
Brazilian
on now.
Butts and heads. That's all I care about.
I was looking at GURP earlier today with his helmet off. He's got a relatively small head compared to his body. I mean, sure. It's not, you know. I mean, these are also very brown-looking orcs. This is definitely not a green-looking orc. And they tend to seem to be smaller heads, bigger bodies. I feel like Garrosh is a bit that way. So I don't know. That doesn't bother me too much. He has a big birthmark on his head, though. And he was looking very, you know, Mr. Gorbachev pull down that wall kind of... Gorbachev head, but
Mr. Doomhammer, tear down this wall,
tear down that spiky barrier to your buildings. Yeah. John, your thoughts? What do you think?
Nobody's ever accused orcs of being overly smart, so I think having a small head is probably okay. And at 10 feet tall, that head's still pretty big.
Yeah,
true. So
that's a good point. Yeah.
So I think he looks really great. I also saw the footage, and I think it looks really good. I think. One of the things that's going to be a big strength is not only does the CGI look really good, but the art style that we've seen for that movie so far, very close to matching kind of Blizzard style for things. And it has almost the CGI quality to it, even for things that aren't CGI. We've seen like the Stormwind armor and stuff like that. And it has a very stylized look that I think when you put the CGI up against that, I think you might end up with a movie that has a very unique look that kind of meshes very well together.
Yeah, I'm convinced it's our best chance, at least right now, to create a movie that is good in its own way, does not necessarily require that it be tied to a video game, but in essence, it becomes what Marvel is for movies for comic books now. Yeah. A movie that really, really makes the industry go, oh, we can make good video game-based movies, and maybe we move into that space and make better video game-based movies. Maybe the Assassin's Creed movie won't be crap. Maybe, you know, 1,000 other ideas that are in the works will be okay if this can pull it off. This could be the gold standard for that moving forward.
Pixels ends up the last bad video game movie.
Yeah, let's hope.
That'd be good.
Let's hope. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, anyway, there's your news, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's the pop quiz. Stay tuned. Guys, this entire episode of Current Geek brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. The Braintree V.0 SDK makes it easy to offer up multiple mobile payment types. Start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, cards, and more, all with a single integration. They give you multiple payment types with one integration, quick, knowledgeable developer support, all the stuff you need to get it done. Start accepting Apple Pay, even Bitcoin, whatever. The integration is there. With the V.0 SDK, one small snippet of code, and you're all set up in less than 10 minutes. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek. All right, it is time, ladies and gentlemen, for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right. John has been through this one other time, so he knows what's up. By the way, congratulations on your second time on the show, by the way.
Thank you. Thanks for putting up with me for two times.
Well, it's not
over yet. I like how Scott congratulates you for something he made happen.
Yeah, congratulations. You've been touched by an angel.
For letting me trick you into coming on my show the second time.
All right. So what we do for the pop quiz, for those not in the know, is we answer ask a series of questions of our guests. They answer them in the affirmative or in the negative. If they get them wrong, they hear that buzzer. And Tom does the score the entire time. We compare them at the end of all of this, see how you did against each other. And on the average, are you guys ready for your questions?
Sure.
Yes.
All right. We're going to start with John this time. Get him out of the way since this is the second time in. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Hold on. The folder that contains the questions is currently spinning. And I don't know why. Oh, that's great. Oh,
that's negative 1 point for the questioner.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, found it. It's working now. All is
software,
well.
Really.
Here we go. Pop quiz. And we start with John. John, here is your questions. They all deal with wrestling trivia.
Oh, no.
professional wrestling trivia, which I know you're a fan of. All right. Here we go.
I am, but this was the one I was afraid I might get.
Who did Rusev originally beat to win the WWE US title back in 2014?
I don't get choices, do I?
Nope.
Was it Dean Ambrose?
You are incorrect. It is Sheamus, whoever Sheamus is.
He's the guy I told you you should model your hair after.
Oh, is that the guy? All right.
Yeah.
I'll consider that.
So you lose a quarter point for asking for choices, but then gain a quarter point for explaining who the guy was. So
weird.
You're even.
So weird.
All right.
At the WCW pay-per-view in 1996, did Hulk Hogan turn heel and join Scott Hall and Kevin Nash to form the NWO? Oh, no, wait, what? I think he meant who did. Or I think they're talking about what was it called. Because the way this is, you can't see this, Tom, but here's the exact question, then you guys make sense of it. At the WCW pay-per-view in 1996, comma, did Hulk Hogan turn heel and join Scott Hall and Kevin Nash to form the NWO? But the answer isn't a yes or no.
Oh, because I was going to say, yeah, yep.
All right, I'm going to give you that because you definitely got it. But the answer was Bash at the Beach. I think you asked it wrong. So this is for Iceworm. There you go, buddy. Take that.
Iceworm loses a point.
I don't know what he did there.
John gets a point and a half for a confusing question.
All right, very good. Who did CM Punk defeat at Survivor Series 2011 to win the WWE title, which started off his 434-day title reign?
John Cena.
You are incorrect. It is Alberto Del Rio.
He wasn't worth anybody's time anyway.
That's what I love about this, actually, these questions. They're all about fake crap that could have gone either way.
Whoa, Scott, what are you talking about?
I mean real things that happen every day. Next up, Hell in a Cell is one of the most brutal match types in wrestling. Who wrestled in the very first Hell in a Cell match? Who were the two participants?
I want to say Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker.
You are correct. Nicely done.
All right, good. I got one. I feel justified for having this as a topic for me now.
All right, how about this one? What was the final pay-per-view produced by WCW before being bought out by WWF/WWE? And it had a name, so it was called the WCW something.
I have no idea on this one.
The Greed. WCW Greed.
Correct. He had no idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who were the original two members of the NWO Wolfpack faction?
Scott Hall and Kevin Nash.
You are so close. Kevin Nash is one of them. The other is Macho Man Randy Savage. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Half point, and then also a quarter point for doing the Savage.
Yeah. New members Conan, Lex Luger, and Sting would all join later. That's not Sting the singer, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, but with wrestling, that is a fair question.
Okay, because people show up. Like Snoop Dogg was just doing something, right? A couple weeks ago?
RoboCop showed up in WCW, so weirder things have happened.
That is also awesome that he ever did anything there. Drop your weapon, did he say? Probably did. All right, next up. Who was the last ECW champion when the company closed down and was bought by WWF/WWE in 2001? The last ECW champion.
I'm going to say Taz.
You are incorrect. It was Rhino. Rhino.
Both animals.
Last question.
Yeah.
Thanks. Ooh, you know what? I'd forgotten about the quarter point animal bonus.
Animal bonus. That sounds good.
There's a subreddit for that.
There is. Last question. What was Seth Rollins' ring name when he was wrestling in the Ring of Honor?
Oh my gosh.
So he went by a different name in the ring.
All of these questions are from the era I didn't watch wrestling.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to call him the Streak in honor of his hair.
It is not. It is Tyler Black. Tyler Black.
Great Ray Stevens song.
Yeah, not bad. I don't think you did that bad, dude. So hold on to your butts because we're going to find out if Ben destroys you in this following question set, which is based on this, Ben. You ready?
Okay, I guess I am.
It's not WoW trivia, but it is Blizzard trivia.
Oh, that is not going to bode well.
How cold or windy does it have to be for a blizzard to form? Just kidding. It's not weather.
I'd say 32 degrees.
That's probably right. Fahrenheit.
You're a half point back from your software failure.
All right, here you go. Number first. At what E3 show was StarCraft originally shown? The original StarCraft.
The first one.
You would be incorrect. Is that your answer?
The second one.
Well, I'm going to give you that for that. And the guess was right. It was 1996, which was the second one. And it was, it did not get a very good response at all. They started over. A little side trivia there. Completely started over.
It gets a negative one guessing penalty, by the way.
Yeah, I forgot those happened. What was the three classes, or were the three classes in the original Diablo?
Okay, also, not having played it, I think that it was... We're going to say Ranger, Monk, and Punchy Guy.
Wrong on all three. It is Warrior, Rogue, and Sorcerer.
Why would there be a Monk and a Punchy Guy?
No, Warrior is often known as Punchy Guy. I'm going to give him a third of a point back. All right. For that.
Punchy Guy. That's great. All right, how about this one?
No technical term for the Warrior.
What is the name of the elite lich you face in Vanilla WoW and the Runes of Andorhal, in the Western Plaguelands?
Oh, this I actually kind of did know.
It did in the past tense.
Yeah. Then Cataclysm happened and it all changed. Yeah. So, yeah. This answer is null and void, pretty much.
Yeah.
I know it's wrong, but I'm going to say Kel'Thuzad.
You are incorrect. It was Araj the Summoner.
That's right. John actually helped me with that quest.
Oh, did he? Oh, weird.
Yeah.
You guys are weird. All right, next up. Who provides the voice of Jim Raynor in the StarCraft series? The only hint I will give is I interviewed him once, so you've probably heard it on the instance.
Yeah, and the worst thing is that I actually follow him on Twitter, but I can't think of his name.
Yeah, super nice guy.
Jim Raynor is a real person.
Tom will not let go of his childhood toys. That's the problem.
In that case, it's Jim Raynor. He does his own voice.
All right. You're incorrect. It is Robert Clotworthy. He is also a very good chance, if you tune into the History Channel or the A&E Network, that he'll be narrating one of those podunk small documentaries they do on those channels. Did your wife work on one? What'd she do?
She worked on one a long time ago about a guy who explored the West.
Whoa.
And I can't remember his name. Jebediah something?
Aren't they always?
Yeah, I know.
Jebediah
Springfield.
Yeah. That's the one. He found it in Springfield.
Yeah.
I love that statue and its missing head. Here's your next question. What are Diablo's heroic abilities in Heroes of the Storm?
Oh, I don't know the names of them, but there's the circle thingy that goes over everybody, and also lightning breath?
You are dead right on the second term, lightning breath. You described accurately the first one.
Armageddon?
Oh, you're so close. Tom, you can decide how to score this, but it was Apocalypse.
Oh, Apocalypse. I always get those mixed up.
Which seems, by the way, Apocalypse and Armageddon, they're both a little over the top for what it actually is. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't hurt anyone, really. There's a little hurting going on, but come on, he's a tank. It doesn't matter.
Would he have gotten more points if instead of Armageddon, he had said Deep Impact?
Yes.
Yes.
Or Dante's Peak.
Yeah. Or Volcano. Yeah. I love movies like that.
You're getting a half point for that, by the way.
Okay.
Well, also, it was Jedediah Smith.
Oh, Jedediah. All right.
Yeah.
I like that. Next up. Where are we here? Second to last question. Third to last. What year was Warcraft Orcs and Humans released? Easy one.
Let's see. That was
92? 94. 1994. Two. The white Bronco was flying down the highway.
Oh, okay, yeah, good point.
0.02 for that.
I remember playing out of my aging 486 as I watched OJ flee on
0.03
on foot and then in car. What planet was Sarah Kerrigan abandoned on while she was under attack by the Zerg?
I'm such a bad Blizzard fan, apparently.
You're the worst, man.
Well, let's see. I haven't really played StarCraft. I played Diablo 3, so I've done something there. Sure. But I know that it was the Zerg homeworld.
You are sort of... No, I don't think so. Well, anyway... It's neither of those. It's Tarsonis is the name of the planet.
Oh, of course.
And it was once populated, but the Zerg completely took it over and took it as theirs. So I guess it was theirs after. In Diablo 2, final question. In Diablo 2, who provided the voice of the character Marius? And I'll give you a hint.
Oh, good.
He was a classic voice actor in the 60s on a little show called, not voice actor, actor, on a little show called Batman.
Adam West?
Incorrect.
Burt Ward? I don't know.
Frank Gorshin, better known as the Riddler from the classic Batman TV series.
Oh, oh really? That's who did his voice?
Yeah, isn't that cool? He's not around anymore. That guy's dead, I think.
I did not know. So well, dead. Yeah, Bale
so
pretended to be Tyrael.
Right.
And then got the information and then killed him.
Yeah. Who was the other brother? You had Mephisto. I always love saying Mephisto. It's
John gets a half point bonus for that.
Oh, great.
All right, that's the scores, and that's the end of it. Now Tom scores it up and tells us who won. So how'd they do?
Well, here's the good news, Ben. You're not in last place.
That'd be Scott, right?
That would be Scott's software with negative 0.5, followed by Ice Worm with negative 0.25 for the typo. Then Ben with 0.86 points, and John with 5.
Wow, look at that. Nice going, wrestler man.
I can see.
Yeah, I feel like a fount of knowledge
well,
for wrestling.
Now use that for good in our next segment called Forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Future predicting was a thing we used to do as a show, and now we do it as a segment because that show is no longer here. Just a reminder, it doesn't exist anymore.
It's your fault.
I know, it's all my fault.
I mean, damn.
Oh,
damn. Water Wars.
Oh, I've been taking credit this whole time. I guess it wasn't my fault. No, thanks, everybody. But we do it as a segment here, and we really enjoy it. So here's one I threw in here. We have E3 coming up right away. In fact, sooner than you think. A couple weeks, I guess. And very excited about it. Are you going, Tom?
I never go.
You know, it's a mess. You don't
can't get
go.
Parking. It's a mess.
Yeah, you don't want to go. Even though you're in LA.
It's too much of a fight to get in and actually see anything.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not Terpster, right? I'm not CEO of a powerful game company.
Right, exactly. Or whatever that is he does. But I'll tell you what. We have plenty of on-the-street folk. I know you've got a guy who I'm going to poach who's going to help you out with DTNS, and he's going to help me out as well. So we'll have people on the ground. Here's my thinking. This year is going to be a lot of VR, and I think that my prediction is this, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong. I think E3 will feature a glut of VR games and experiences that are just short of bad, and people will come out of this event with a couple of things that really stand out and they get blown away by, and then the rest they're going to feel like is bloat and they're not sure about the future of this technology after all. That it may be relegated to one-off amusements and, you know, they'll have their place for certain things. The funny thing is I don't necessarily even agree with my own prediction, but I just think there'll be a tiny souring on VR games. Not VR as a technology or its ability to deliver stuff, but developers making compelling game experiences. John, what do you think?
I think you're right, but I think you're right in the wrong place. I think people are going to come out of E3 and still feel pretty hyped about VR. And I think that you are right. It's going to be a lot of like, here's a cool little demo. Here's a cool thing doing something you've never done before. Everybody's going to be real excited about it. And then the reality is going to finally get out there and everyone's going to realize it's just a bunch of little like mini games and kind of, you know, pandering to that same Wii crowd where it's like, oh, look, check out this novelty. Mm-hmm. But it's a higher buy-in novelty than the Wii was. And as a result, I think that's where the problem's going to be.
What do you think there, Ben?
Yeah, I'm actually very much in the same boat. I mean, the fact that for the most part, you're going to need some sort of hardware already in order to, you know, get the VR to work, whether it's a PC or a PS4 or whatever. I don't like the idea of just mini games. I mean, look, when people switched to the Wii U, it was, oh, it's the Wii U at E3, and they had everything that's all gimmicky. And what have they done with the gamepad other than using it as like a screen when someone's watching TV?
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good point. I don't know. I just feel like I don't want this to sound either like I'm thinking VR is not the future, because I think it actually is for a lot of things. I just think that it's going to take a while, like any truly revolutionary step forward. It takes forever for developers and software to get their head around it and to make it do things that you know, that it's capable of doing. And unlike Kinect and unlike Wii, there isn't as much of a quick ceiling to that. I think there is a lot of potential that's untapped so far and that will go a long way. I just think right now, like out of the gate this year, when they're trying to get consumers genuinely excited, and in this case, you know, it's a trade show, so they're trying to get buyers and Walmarts and Targets of the world and everybody else to get excited about it. I think that's going to be a harder sell than we think, and those experiences are not going to be the polished things we hope they'll be.
Yeah, I don't think that gaming is really the right way to go with it. I think it was either last week or the week before you said that you watched a movie sitting next to someone virtually.
Yeah.
you know, just like different sort of interactions and, you know, more social media stuff, I think it really is the way for this to go, so that, you know, it's more face to face. I mean, digitally than like, say, Skype is. You're going to be in the room with someone as opposed to, you know, just cameras.
So our true technologist, Tom Merritt, what do you think?
I think you have the perfectly rational expectation prediction here. I can't fault any of this. But my gut is we're going to see something surprising. And maybe the way that your prediction ends up staying true, but in a way that you didn't expect, kind of a Twilight Zone twist, right? Is that what maybe Oculus or maybe Vive shows off is not a game. But I really do think that one of them is going to show off something that everyone is going to be blown away by. It's going to be unexpected, and everyone is going to be thrilled and excited to get their hands on it. And maybe it's a interactive movie, maybe it's just a universe you can walk around in. I don't have a prediction for that part of it, but I think there's going to be something that people just look at and say, that is it. That is why I want a headset. And maybe it's not a game. Maybe that's the key here, is that there's the underlying criticism is like, yes, but this was E3, you know, and none of the games that we saw were any different than these templates that we've been seeing for years. Maybe that's how that ends up being true. Because I get what you're saying. Usually that's what happens, right? You build something up, you show it off, and everybody's like, not quite there yet, not that excited.
Yeah,
and John's right. People at the show always are much more forgiving until after the show when the reality sets.
Yeah, the hype, it's like an Apple conference. You walk out of there with a glow on, and then later you're like, wait a minute, do I need to watch? It's like that.
No, but I
as it turns out. But I mean, I don't want to diminish how excited I am to see what they show at E3, because obviously they feel, all of them feel like gaming is an important branch of this, clearly. But I also think Facebook, Oculus, and even Vive are, and you know, pretty much the entire Steam VR initiative, I don't think they're banking on gaming being the ultimate thing. Because if I really sit down and think, what do I want out of my experience with a helmet on? What I actually want isn't all that interactive in the sense of a, you know, like Twitch gameplay or, oh no, I didn't beat the boss, I got to try again, or, you know, all the tropes and things we're used to with video games. What I want is presence in places I can't be in any other way. I want to see things that I can't see in other ways. I want to be able to feel like I'm surrounded by stuff that isn't there. Like, I really want those experiences. It's more about tone and atmosphere than it is about mechanics and goals and missions and things.
Maybe it'll be an insomnia cure.
Oh, how about that?
You just put it on and it just makes you so relaxed. You just want to nap.
Oh, I thought meant it made that movie better. Now I understand what you're saying. Now I get it.
Maybe it's a cure for every bad movie ever made.
I think I have it, Scott. I've been sitting here thinking about what do I want in VR, and I think you'll agree. No Man's Sky.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, okay. That'd be cool.
Well, I mean, everything they've shown from that lends itself to that being possible. There's still this issue of games that are going to make me run all over the place, I have less interest in. Not because I don't want the exercise, but because it's just ganky and you got two cables hanging off everything. And even the, you know, this is true of the Sony thing as well, Morpheus. Lots of cables to worry about. So most of these experiences are going to be us standing or sitting relatively still. And that game seems like you're moving around a lot, but, you know, that may work. I mean, No Man's Sky is my most important game I care about, period, right now, anyway. So maybe they'll join the two up. Who knows? I mean, Sony's basically treating that game like a first-party game, so they have a real opportunity there, I'm guessing. But, yeah, expect a lot. We've got standalone PC presentation, which they've never done before, where it's a bunch of PC companies, and I'm suspecting a bunch of VR talk there, and Oculus on the 11th, I think it is, are doing their own standalone conference as well. So regardless, they'll have stuff to show. We'll see what sticks, and surely we'll talk about it on this show.
That's it. It'll be stickers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Finally, a feedback. Got an email from somebody. You can call us, by the way, and leave voicemails. No, everyone's always afraid to. 801-471-0462, or you can email us, currentgeek@gmail.com. Got one here that says, Dear Current Geekers, this is from Kronks99. Is there a reason that you can think of that Mad Max is so freaking good? It just seems to defy all logic in being as good as it is. In an age of nitpicking, damned if I could find a single thing to nit or pick. Anyway, have a great show, and may the dirt be with you. I don't have an explanation
either.
Email
has its own solution embedded within it. Yep. You know why it's as good? Because you couldn't find anything wrong with it. That's why. Yeah. Like, it kind of assumes, like, nothing's ever good.
Yeah.
I'm suspicious. Why is this movie good?
Yeah. It's a strange thing to ask us, but I could not be more with him on this.
Yeah.
That movie completely blew my mind, and I went in already hyped, and I came out a different human being than I went in. That's a little hyperbole, but wow. I loved this.
I'm not sure I want
to
see it.
I loved this movie. Oh, you haven't seen it yet. That's right.
Oh, I haven't.
When you go, I am very curious, because Tom's even-handed approach to things is always a good, it's always a good barometer for me. I really want to know what you think, because I went in there kind of skeptical, a little bit like, well, you know, you made Babe, Pig in the City and the two Happy Feet movies. How much more Road Warrior do you got in you, George Miller? It turns out he had all of it in him. All of it. And he smeared it all over the screen in this beautiful chaos, covered in dirt and grime. It is an amazing film. I've said this too much lately, but I love it.
I love Road Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I love Mad Max.
Yeah.
Beyond Thunderdome is good. I'm not going to criticize it, but and I think from what I've heard, Fury Road is very much Road Warrior Mad Max.
It is, and then it's more. It's that, and then it's so much more.
But not a remake, a modernization.
A modernization, yes, but also a decision to rely heavily on practical effects instead of CGI and stuff. There's a realness to it that really puts it above everything else in its category, whatever those other movies may be. I've not been this joyful about a movie in probably 8 to 10 years, and that says a lot. And I went back. I went back and said, all right, what movies have come out in the last 10 years? Well, I really like Dark Knight, and I thought Inception was pretty rad. And, you know, I'm like naming off all these movies, not all Christopher Nolan movies, but, you know, what movies do I like? And I've yet to find one in that 10-year span that I liked more than this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen it?
Not yet. I'm planning on it this weekend, though.
I have not. Scott's vehement love for this movie has got me really excited to go see it, but I haven't had time.
And here's the thing. You could say that, well, I hope Scott doesn't oversell it, so I go and I'm disappointed. I don't actually think it's possible. Now, maybe you go and hate it. That's possible. But that's different, right? Overselling a movie and then totally hating it is not the same as overselling it and sort of liking it, if you know what I mean. My overselling will not ruin this for you. You will still see things movies have never shown you before, and it will show you them in such glorious digital projection beauty that you'll come out a changed man. It's an amazing movie. It's incredible. Anyway,
look, I'm just looking for the long-awaited sequel of Babe, Pig in the Wasteland.
Yeah, right. That'll do, Dirty Pig. That'll do. He'll say,
"You'll do for dinner, Pig."
I loved it. I loved everything about it. And you guys will all have to tell me what you think when you get done. And that, ladies and gentlemen, marks the end of yet another episode of Current Geek. I want to thank our guests for being here. You guys were rad. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Thanks for having
thank
me.
Thank you.
Ben, tell the fine folks at home where they can find more of the Bumhoeffer.
The easiest way to do that is follow me on Twitter. I am at Al the Mage.
Yeah, he's a good man, that Al the Mage, and he will help you with whatever you need.
Especially anybody who plays a mage is all right in my book.
Yeah, that's
all right.
Even though he mostly doesn't play a mage. Also, just kidding. John, what's going on? What do you have?
You can follow me on Twitter at John_Jagger. We're going to be recording Azeroth Roundtable tonight. You can also find more of you and I, Scott, tomorrow during the NVIDIA stream from 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Load of Witcher content tomorrow. So,
oh yeah,
look for that. Yeah, they have asked, and I said you don't even have to ask for me to play a bunch of Witcher, and then our usual third hour Heroes match and some news and some other stuff. So yes, come on by, catch John and I at 3 p.m. Pacific to 6 p.m. Pacific every Saturday.
You know that Maroon 5 song, Moves Like Jagger?
Yeah, that one.
No,
It's about John. A lot of people think it's about some other Jagger.
Yeah.
It's about John.
I've told John I thought they were saying, I need to move my jacket. Like you left it in the VIP closet and you need to, someone said, sir, you're going to have to move your jacket.
Well, the more recent song, Sugar, I kept thinking was Sugar USB. So
nice.
There you go.
Nice. Well done. Well, thank you both for being here. Tom Merritt, anything else before we go, sir?
Go buy Citadel 32 for the cover.
Yeah, buy it for the cover. That stay
Tom
for Merritt the story.
Books.com.
Yeah, stay for the story, though, because it's really good. It's well written. I drew it. If you're coming in Nerdtacular, we'll sign it. Thank you all for your support. We really mean it. Big thanks to Braintree for sponsoring today's program. Big thanks to Andrew Allen for our theme music. That's the little intro and outro you hear. Don't forget, currentgeek.reddit.com, currentgeek@gmail.com, and currentgeek.com. That is going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at the wide variation in local standards for postmortem rites of publicity, thanks to a fun bit of legal research I performed this week for a friend. The right of publicity, also known as personality rights, protects an individual by providing the right to control how one's name, image, likeness, or other identity features are used in a commercial context. In short, companies cannot market products using endorsement-like materials where the person on the marketing products has not consented or licensed those rights to the company. The personality rights are based on natural rights and property rights theories, therefore being based on similar legal theories like copyright. These rights survive death and pass to heirs, again, just like copyright term. But in the United States, these personality rights are primarily based on state law, and our union of states vary wildly as far as how long these rights last after death. 27 states have explicitly established some form of right of publicity, with a little over half these states setting forth a right in a statute or law that has been passed by legislators. The other states have judge-defined rights, also known as common law. Perhaps not surprisingly, the standards vary dramatically across these states based on different judges and legislators making the laws. For example, the three states with the longest postmortem personality rights, granted by statute, are Indiana and Oklahoma, at 100 years apiece, and Tennessee, with an indefinite right so long as the persona is in continual use. California currently provides 70 years postmortem rights, Virginia 20 years, Florida 40 years, and New York none. It makes a real difference where you die, as that's where the rights are determined. If that doesn't seem fair, that's because it's not. While some celebrities or luminaries like Albert Einstein benefit from decisions in law allowing continued control of the deceased person's persona, others like Nikola Tesla do not, simply because they died in New York. The bottom line is, even though all 50 states can likely be implied to have rights of publicity in some form, the piecemeal state-by-state method of defining the term and operation of this property right has resulted in what appears to be a total mess. You may not like copyrights long-term, but at least it's predictable. Perhaps it's time for the USA to consider standardizing the right of publicity as well. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions or segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.